continue on with sugars of Dr. Shalom. Here, the Mishnah about Samach Aleph of an Aleph begins to tell us about a whole series of halachas that are revolving around one basic conflict. On the one hand, we want to try to enhance Shalom. That's the goal of all these sugars of Dr. Shalom. On the other hand, we can't do that at the expense of violating Aveiros. So if there's any real serious Aveiros that's going to be violated, obviously we cannot do that even just to maintain Shalom. So that was a little bit tricky because sometimes, of course, it's something that we're familiar with. The days Chazal also that this phenomenon existed. And sometimes I have to interact with people who are not as careful in halacha, and sometimes that interaction may cause us to be involved in certain practices that maybe are not 100% up to par in terms of halacha. On the other hand, if we don't involve ourselves in some of these practices, that may lead to further strife, to further machlokes. We have to walk a tightrope in terms of, on the one hand, that Yisrael is very, very important. On the other hand, we can't violate Yisrim either. So the mission begins with the following discussion of Samach Aleph of an Aleph. Mash'elas isha l'chaberta ha'chashuda ala shviyas nofa u'kvar v'rechai v'tayu. That a woman is allowed to lend to her friend, even though her friend is not so careful with Shemitah. So she's going to be violating some of these surim of Shemitah, a whole array of different possible surim. There was no limit to how many different possible surim you can violate. It's right to one place that Dine Perishvias Merubimheim, that there are a lot of them, a lot of different possibilities that you can violate the halachas of the sanctity of the fruit of Shvias. The problem is that, say, Rachel is very careful about Shemitah, and Leah is not so careful. So Leah knocks on Rachel's door and says, during Shemitah, can I borrow this kitchen utensil? Can I borrow that kitchen utensil? So now it's possible that she's going to use those utensils to violate Yisurim. So on the one hand, is that Kishalof? We need to close the door and say, no, I'm sorry, we're firmer than you. We keep Shemitah, you don't keep Shemitah, I'm not going to help you. That's not such a great idea. On the other hand, I can't actively help you do things that are also. So the Mishnah says what you can do is as follows. You can lend your friend, even though she's not so careful about Shemitah, you can lend her a nafa ukvara v'rechayim v'tanor. These four different utensils, nafa ukvara, different kinds of sifters and sieves, v'rechayim are grinders, the tanner is literally an oven, a movable portable oven. You can lend her these kinds of things because you're not actively doing anything wrong. I'm giving somebody an oven. I'm giving somebody a grinder. If they want to do it, if they choose to do something with it, that's their avera, not my avera. What if your neighbor knocks on the door and says, please do me a favor, can you help me? Help me grind, help me sift, help me do activities that you're not supposed to be doing. She's not observing the din mishpita properly. That you can't do. So they were walking this tightrope that I can kind of give you things that you may use. It's not an outright lift either. You may use, may not use it. So you may use it to do things that are not appropriate in halacha. So that may be okay, bring back a shalom. But for me to actively do something with you, that would be a problem. Then the Mishnah continues. Mashalas for Ashes Ama Oretz. I'm sorry, Ashes Chavra, Mashalas for Ashes Ama Oretz. Nofel Kvara Ubareres for Tochenes Umrakenes Ima. That in the days of Chazal, there used to be two systems of people. Either a person was a Chaver or an Ava Oretz. So an Ava Oretz didn't mean the way it means today. Today we say Ava Oretz means a guy doesn't know how to learn. And Ava Oretz in those days meant that he wasn't so careful in certain areas of Halacha, particularly in the realm of Tzumah V'Tahara. So the opposite of an Ava Oretz was a Chaver, someone who accepted by themselves, who was proficient, who was knowledgeable in the laws and was practicing in the laws of Tzumah V'Tahara.
So, is it not knowledgeable or not shomer? Is
it too? Yeah, so in the days of Chazal, it usually meant they weren't shomer. It could be sometimes they weren't shomer because they weren't so knowledgeable. That's also possible. But it's more the focus on the person's religious level rather than his actual Torah knowledge. So an Eishes Chover, if you have a wife of a Chover, so she's observing the Din of Tumah Tamah properly, she's allowed to lend the wife of an Ava Oretz, once again, enough for the Kfar and the different sieves, but Uba Res, the Chaz of Gazir, she's actually allowed to even work with her. So that's what the Gemara is going to discuss. Why, in the first case, do we prohibit working together with the neighbor who's not careful in halacha? Whereas when it comes to Tumah Tahara, so we're much more lenient. About how the Mishnah concludes, about Mishnah Tatlus Samayim Lo Siga Ima, Mishnah Ema Zigine Ovi Aveira. The only time that one woman is allowed to help the other woman in things that are going to be not such a proper observance, that's meticulous in the laws of Tumah Tahara, that's only as long as the food is still dry. The minute that the food becomes wet, and we'll see the girls can explain why that's important, so then she's not allowed to help her. Because at that point, we're running into a serious, a real halachic problem. It's almost like as long as the food is dry, it hasn't yet been exposed to water, there's less of a problem. The minute that it gets wet, that's going to become more of a problem. And once it's a real aveira involved, then you cannot help somebody do an aveira, even at the expense of Dagi Shalom. The kula lo amr el nei Dagi Shalom. Any of the leniencies in this Mishnah, even though the leniencies are not entirely there, but whatever leniencies that are there are only instituted by Dag Yisrael. And then similar things about Ziki today, Nacha B'Shvias, of a low Yidei Yisrael, that if you see a non-Jew doing work on the Shemitah year, so that's okay, non-Jews are not obligated in Shemitah, so you can give them chizuk, you can say to them, what you're doing is okay, and the Gemara thinks that maybe it means you can even actually help them out. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But if you see a Jew working in the Shemitah year, so you shouldn't give any chizuk. You shouldn't say, great job, wow, what great planting, no, good luck on the harvest. That's not right. You're not supposed to help, you're not supposed to assist him if he's doing something that's not, sir. You're allowed to give a shalom aleichem to non-Jews all throughout the year. Why would one think otherwise? Because Rashi explains that the very phrase shalom aleichem, Darshan B'Shlomo is the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom is one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's in fact why the practice is to say Shalom Aleichem. We show him right at the end of the second Tzbakos that in the days of Boaz and Rus, so Boaz is based and instituted that when people say hello to each other, they should say hello with the Shem Hashem. That's a covenant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Just say HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be with you. That's what the Pasuk says in the Gilas Rus. Yom HaBoaz Hashem Yimachem, Yom HaLon Yivrach HaShem. So the Gemara says that Boaz instituted. That's a good thing that people should always have a Shem name on their lips. So the Rishonim write, how do we fulfill that halacha? You're supposed to give a shol b'shem. So the Rishonim write, that's where the minute came from. Say shalom aleichem. Shalom is the name of Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that suffices for that. So if you give a shalom aleichem to a non-Jew, it's not really right. You're just kind of flippantly using the Shem Hashem. So the Rishonim says, it's okay. They don't get shalom. That you're, so, no pun intended. You're allowed to say shalom aleichem, they don't get shalom.
Shalom,
it's
like right after
the Avoloa, they struck. Right. Rashi said, the Shalom, 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 so that last phrase is going back even on the Goyim as well. So, comes the Gemara just trying to work through some of the intricacies of this Mishnah. Maishna Reishi, Maishna Seifa. How come when it comes to the beginning of the Mishnah when it comes to Shemitah. So we seem to be very machmir, that we let you give certain utensils to them, but we don't let you actually work with them. When it comes to the end of the Mishnah, so we are lenient and we let you even work together with a person. One woman can actually help, can literally work together with her. The problem is that in the second half of the Mishnah, when we're dealing with an Eishes Amaretz, so the Ami Haaretz, as the Gemara is going to explain, were not only not careful in the rules and the laws of Tumah V'Tahara, they weren't so careful in the rules of maestros either. They didn't separate all the maestros properly. And that's a huge problem because I'm basically facilitating, I'm helping you violate the Isur of eating tevel. Tevel means fruit that produce that true was a maestros weren't taken over properly. The Mishnah tells us that in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, so there was a whole survey that was sent out, there was a whole study that was made as to try to see whether the farmers out in the far-flung places were they careful about Trumas and Maestros or not? The Gemara says, Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Not exactly clear was that, but the Shel's father. There were a few Yochanan Kohen Gadols along the way. So one of the Yochanan Kohen Gadols sent out the messages, and they made a whole survey, a whole study as to what the level of religiosity was in this realm. So they came up with some interesting results, the Mishnah says, that they realized that people were separating Trumas properly. Everybody was careful about Truma. Meister, people were a little bit less careful about them. Somehow, Truma was a little bit more religious. It was a Kohen, you know, Kedusha. So people thought of that a little bit more seriously. Maestros, people were a little bit lax in. So that's why Yochanan Kohen Gadol made a takana that anytime you buy produce from an Ama Oret, someone who's not accepted to be a regular Chaver, then you have to take off Maestros with something. And that was the takana that's called Demai. So in the time of Sechta, in Sayyid Israel, it was dedicated to Masechta's Demai. All the intricacies of that Din Rabbanan, that Chumad Rabbanan, because of that concern that arose in the days of Baishedi. So here too, the Gemara is asking that in the end of the Mishnah, we're dealing with Amaratzim, so the Ami Aretz are not careful about Maestros. So how can we let this woman assist her friend Tomorrow, you're not allowed to violate actual Nisurim. You can't do a little bit of Mr. Eve. You can't actually work together with people violating Nisurim, even to promote peace. So what's the difference between the ratio that we're machmir, vis-a-vis Shemitah, and Maisos are very makel?
Mishnah's use of Isha, is it to exclude Ish?
No, it's just that it was the women who were doing right. This kind of work. Yeah. Remember out in the fields harvesting, the women were the ones who were doing the grinding. So Amr Abaye, Rov Ami Oret Ba'asrin. So Abaye says that most of the Ami Oret actually did take mice. That's what the Gemara explains, that even though they found that people were not as careful without mice, it didn't mean that most people weren't careful. Actually, most of the farmers, even those in the far-flung villages, were still somewhat careful with mice. Most really were, but there was a significant minority that wasn't. So therefore, Abaye says, since most of the Ami aren't taking Maestros, Minat Torah, this is not really a concern. And therefore, we're allowed to look the other way and let the Eishes Chaver help out the Eishes Am Aretz. Because again, whatever we can do to promote the peace and harmony of the Jewish community, we're going to do. So if there would be a real bona fide problem of not separating Maestros, then we'd have no choice. We couldn't help out our fellow workers. But since it's only a Chumrah, somewhat of a far-fetched Chumrah, therefore, it's okay. Rabbi Omar, Rabbi says, no, we totally misunderstood who these Am Aretz are in the Mishnah. Halcha be'Am Aretz to Rabbi Meir, but to Mutamar de Rabbanim. When we use the term Am Aretz was sometimes used to people who weren't meticulous in Tumah v'Tahara, and sometimes it wasn't people who were meticulous, people who were not meticulous in Chumas and Maestros. So here Rabbi says that the term Am Aretz in the Mishnah is referring to the way Rabbi Meir used the term. Different Tanaim used it to describe different people. It was Rabbi Meir's description of Am Aretz, somebody who is separating Maestros, but not careful about the laws of Tumah v'Tahara. And this Issur of Tumah v'Tahara is only an Issur de Rabbanim anyway. There's no Truma here. There's no Maaseh Sheni. There's no Karbanos here. This is what we call Chulin B'Tahara. So the din is Min HaTorah. If you eat regular food, you want to have a slice of pizza, it can be Tomei. There's nothing awesome in HaTorah about that. There were Chulin with the Rabbanim, and you're able to try to eat even Chulin B'Tahara. So the Isurim that are going on here are very, very low-level Isurim. At worst, it's a somewhat of a low-level Issur de Rabbanim eating Chulin B'Tumah. And therefore, that Issur de Rabbanim we're going to lift. How do we know that Rabbi Meir used the term Am Aretz to describe someone who is just not careful in Tumah? Decide your Ezu Am Aretz. How do you define Am Aretz? Kosher Eina Ocho Chul B'Tahara De Rabbi Meir. That was Rabbi Meir's usage of the term. The Chachamim Omim Kosher Eina Ma'aseh Peiraisa. When the Chachamim used the same term, they were referring to the farmers who weren't taking off Maaseh properly. So bottom line is that the reason why the Mishnah is a machmir not to let you work with somebody during Shemitah is because that's a real bona fide. Those are Yisurim Deraisa to violate the Dinim of Kedusha Shviyas, whereas to violate the Dinim of Chulin B'Tahara, it's not the end of the world. So comes the Gemara and says, really, is that true? V'hamin Gittani Seifa M'shetat L'Samayim V'tziga Ima V'chlau D'Reisha L'Avetu V'Tahara Askinan. The Gemara says, wait a second. From the fact that the Mishnah says at the very end that once water is introduced, then we have a problem. Well, what does water introduced mean? So water always means that the food becomes mukhshar lekabel tumah. The din is, let's say I have a dry apple. It never came into contact with water. So it can touch a dead body, so it doesn't become tummy. Nothing, food doesn't become tummy unless it has hekshar lekabel tumah. That's the first, be exposed, that's the first be touched by a liquid. So comes the Gemara and says, from the fact that the Mishnah doesn't introduce the liquids until later, it sounds like at the beginning that wasn't even the issue. So Gemara says, no, you misunderstood it. Reisha v'seifa b'tuma b'tara. The entire Mishnah is talking about tuma b'tara. So what does the Mishnah mean at the end when it says that once water is exposed, it becomes a much more serious problem? For Reisha b'tuma schul v'seifa b'tuma schala. The Reisha in the beginning is talking about that it's still chulin, it's still regular food. So to be metame regular food is a very, very low level prohibition. Whereas the end of the Mishnah is talking about that it's already subject to the mitzvah of challah. Once it becomes a dough, like we've been learning a lot about challah in the bracha sugyas. Once it becomes a dough, lula ova, once water is introduced to this flour, that's what's going on. She's preparing the flour, she's grinding and sifting the flour. Once water is mixed in, then it becomes subject to the mitzvah of farshas challah. Once it becomes subject to farshas challah, then we're dealing with a potential issur d'oraisa. Challah is another kodesh. Challah is like truma. Tami challah to actively be a dayim. Tami challah is an issur d'oraisa. Rashi quotes. So that's what the Mishnah means. So the bottom line is the entire Mishnah is talking about tumah v'tahara. The reason why we're lenient at the beginning of the Mishnah is because it's a low level assert. We're more mach at the end of the Mishnah because it's a high level assert. So now the Gemara says, wait, we have a contradiction. Token at the top of Samach Aleph Mudeis. Tochenin umafkidin eitzel ochle shvius, the eitzel ochle perasein betuma. So what is the din if I want to take care of my own stuff? I want to grind my own grain, and then I want to leave it somewhere. Let's say that somebody has a mill, so I'm borrowing their mill. I don't want to schlep my stuff back now. So I prepare my grain, my turn it to my flour, and then I want to leave it by somebody who works, who owns it, who is not so careful in halacha. Now a new question becomes: do we have to be concerned lest they're going to flip, lest they're going to mix up my flour with their flour? So the Bryce says that you don't have to worry about that. You're allowed to grind. You're allowed to leave it there. Eitz halacha shvius, even though the people who are quote unquote watching it are people who are not careful about shvita, the eitzel ochle perosan bituma, or people who don't observe the dinim of eating fruit in the state of tahara. So even though the people who are there are not so careful, the odds that they're going to take my stuff and switch it and give me their transfer stuff, like, take it there. But why do they have any incentive to do that? So we can assume that that's okay. Aval, even though I'm allowed to leave my stuff there, aval lo le'ochle shvius, v'lo le'ochle perasei betuba. But I'm not allowed to work for them. So if the fellow there asks me, please give me a hand with his stuff, if he's not careful about shvita, or he's not careful about tuba betara, so I'm not allowed to do that. So that contradicts our Mishnah. So our Mishnah said that Tumah B'Tahara, if you look the other way, not such a terrible issue anyway, Shalom, I can give somebody a hand. Here the Brice is saying, no, it is a serious issue. I can't just stop giving them a hand. Rabbi said, that's different. That's talking about a Kohen who is careless about even Tumah, the state of Tumah. So it's one thing to eat a couple of chulandika apples, Tumah, that's at worst, the low-level issue of the Rabbana. But someone who eats Tumah, Tumah, that's an issue of the Raisa. That's what the Braisa says, that if it's someone who's a Kohen, a choshtach, Tumah, Tumah, skinan, davali Tumah, the Raisa. So he says, wait a second, then you're guilty of overkill. If you're telling me you're dealing with a guy, the guy's mamish not from, the guy's, it's like in treif, the guy's eating Tumah, Tumah, that's an issue of government at Torah, yachi mafkidin. So then I should be more careful about leaving stuff. Imagine I go to a guy's house, he's totally not from, he's totally strafe, and I ask him, can I leave my unmarked, unidentified piece of food in your fridge? How do you know I may end up being he may end up giving his food in return? So comes the Gemara and asks, if we're dealing with a low level, it's a derabbanan, it's unlikely anything's going to go wrong. But if we're dealing with a truma tomato, that's deraisa, is it permissible? For minute, we have another braisa that says that mafkidin truma eitzel yisrael am aretz. So strangely enough, if I have truma and I want to leave it by an ama oret, someone who's not very careful in any of the halachas, if it's a Yisrael, I can do that. You know why? The Yisrael will never touch my truma. Yisrael's scared of truma. Yisrael, even if the ama oret, they know that that's the holy stuff for the rabbi. That's for the priest, for the kohen. They're not going to touch that. So I don't have to be concerned that he's going to switch it on me. But if it's a kohen ama oret, he's very familiar. He's very comfortable with truma. Yeah, he's so comfortable with truma that he eats a betuma. So the kohen am aretz, you have to be careful. So you're not allowed to leave stuff by someone who has a chashash and a deraisa. So if you're going to tell me that the second braisa is talking about deraisa thinking problems, so then it should be problematic even simply to leave the stuff there. So Amar Rabbi Lo, you're right. Talking about iskina b'klicheres amukov tzamit posil. The Gemara says that it's talking about a unique situation where there's nothing that the kohen can do to make it tame. We don't have to be worried that the coin was scrounging around and may have touched my stuff and made it tame. I said, no, it's not going to happen. You know why? Because the truma was wrapped up properly. It was inside a kli cheres, inside an earthenware vessel that cannot become tame unless something actually goes inside it. And it was covered over entirely with the tzamit pasul, simply precious chukas. It's literally sealed. It's a sealed earthenware vessel. So there's no way that the coin is going to make that through tummy in any shape or form. Yes, no, it's not true. It's possible to make something tummy, even if you can't touch it. If his wife is a nida, so she's tameya, if she simply moves it, it's going to become tummy. So if we're talking about something that's a shalva de raisa, how in the world should I take truma and leave it by a kohen? The kohen is not proficient, not careful in the laws of tuma v'tahara, the laws of truma tameya. So he or his wife is going to either intentionally or unintentionally end up touching it, moving it, to make a tame. So that's out of the question. See, first is you're right. Elamar Amar of Yirmiyah Lokasha, Kan Bepeir Shehukshiru, Kan Bepeir Shehukshiru. That the only time that I'm allowed to leave stuff by the Kohen is if the food is not yet subject to Tumah. It never got Hesher in the first place. So even if the Kohen will touch it, the world's not going to come to an end. So we're not so worried about him mixing up the food. That the Gemara is going to introduce a little bit later, why that isn't the concern. But we're much more concerned with the Kohen, potentially the non-firm Kohen, potentially touching the food, or him or his wife touching the food and making it Tamei. So that the Gemara said, it depends. If there's a real concern, the food is ready, Hukshul Kabbalah Tumah, that's a problem. If not, not. So again, we're walking a tightrope here. On the one hand, whenever there's a chashash of a real derais, I'm going to end up by mistake eating chuba today, all kind of terrible things that are really surim, so that we cannot let any of this go. We have to be machmir, and it's going to lead to a little bit of a strike. I can't violate surim derais, just to make a little bit of shalom. But if it's anything that's not an outright issue derais, at least far fetched chashashos that are only derabanan anyway, so we're going to look the other way in order to enhance shalom.
Is it not sure that someone going on the kucharet?
I think once it's a lahok shul tuba, then you don't need to cook anymore. It's not tummy anyway.
So eating open fruit or vegetable that's dry,
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you wonder maybe the guy's gonna make a tummy. Maybe he'll make it wet, but he can't even make it wet if he wants. So only the bialim can only the bialim can make it. I don't know. It's machlekes to be shown whether somebody else can make it shul kabbat tuba. I don't know. Not sure. Or Minu, so comes and says, we still have a problem. We have a Mishnah tucked away in Maseches Dabai. Hamoli chitin letochen kusi or letochen amoretz, hare elu becheskosim lemaisel leshvias, avalolotuma. If I bring wheat to a grinder who's either a kusi, so kusi, I'm a whole different ballgame. There were people who weren't 100% sure that they were Jewish. Or letochen amoretz, or someone we know is Jewish, but we know he's careless as well, and he's going to grind the grain for me. I don't have to assume that he switched on me. Like, why in the world would he take my stuff and give me somebody else's stuff? So I can assume that for the purposes of Maestros and Shemit, I'm still in good shape. I've a little bit to him, but I have to be concerned that maybe they became tummy. He doesn't have to switch it. If he himself is not careful and he touches my food, that's going to be a problem. So here in the previous source, we said the previous Bryce said, I can leave things by the Amar Aretz and don't have to worry about them becoming tummy. And he was saying, we do have to worry about them becoming tummy. So the verse says,
Kusi to a guy.
Kusi is a tricky case.
No, I know what it is, but like in the Darga of being Shomer of Darga Shalom, going back to the Mishnah is using, a guy and Amar Aretz. Here it's shifting to Kusi now.
Well, it depends what you think Kusi is. If you think the Kusi felt with Machalik Zataram and the Kusi were Jewish or not. So if you think that the Kusi were Jewish, then they're just one big group of Amar Aretz. If you think the Kusi were not Jewish, then they're one big group of Goyim. So there are different opinions in the days of the Tanarim. Mar says in the later days, everybody came to the realization they weren't really Jewish. It was a whole question about their conversion, because the original Kusi, when they converted, the Pesukim say Malach, and they were still over there by the Zohar. So they were.
So the question is, are they lower than a guy or?
Well, I don't think they're worse than a guy. They're either better than goyim or they're like goyim. Today's world, they're like goyim and goyim. The kusim that live in Eretz Yisrael agrees with. So I think even according to the Israeli government standards, unless my mumchim Eretz Yisrael, Tom, are you aware of what's going on? They're not that far. You know, they're not that far from you. They're not that far away. So the kusim, I think today, are not even considered to be a Jewish in their Israeli in their Israeli status. If I'm not mistaken, they're considered to be like a separate group of individuals. Well, there aren't so many of them. A handful of them still floating around in high Greece. So the Mishnah says that for Tumah you have to be worried that maybe you touched it. The Gemara says that's a contradiction. Before we said you don't have to be worried, now we say you do have to be worried. The Gemara says, no, what kind of contradiction is that? Hi my Rumya. Lav Okimna Bepershna Hukshuru. We said a minute ago that the only reason why you're not worried is because the fruit wasn't Hukshur anyway. It never became wet anyway. So even if the non-firm person would have touched it, it still wouldn't have made it tummy. But wasn't the answer was such a simple answer? The question almost was hard to understand. With the karila, my karila. That's a phrase the Gemara will ask sometimes. Why'd you ask the question? The answer, you gave the answer 3 lines before you asked the question. So So the Gemara says, no, the reason why we posed the question was because we were trying to lead up to the next question. There was another question that we wanted to ask. The first half of that Mishnah said that if you send the stuff to the worker, to the grinder, who's the Amaretz, you can assume that he hasn't played around with it. That the stuff that he's giving back, I don't have any identifying features on my grain. All grain looks the same. I can assume that whatever grain I gave him, if I already separated two semaishes, if my grain is not for the Shemitah year, I don't have to be worried that less the grain is going to return to me is going to be Tevel, is going to be Shemitah. Which is really, is that true? Said, you're really not afraid that there's nothing to be worried about? Or minute, we learned another Mishnah in Maseches Tabai that contradicts this, that the Mishnah talks about the possibility, if I give something which doesn't have simon, so it's unidentifiable, I give it to somebody, and now I get it, quote unquote, back in return, how do I know it's the same thing? Maybe he switched it for something trace. So the Mishnah quotes an interesting thing. A person is giving it to his mother-in-law. He's giving a dough. Now she explains, he's going to make him a cake. He's going to make him some bread. So he's very firm. He's a chaver, and his mother-in-law is not as firm. So she's not as observant, not as careful. So nosin lechamoso, ma'aser eshu nosin la, eshu noto hemena, mesha cheshuda mechalavas amiskalkia. So the Mishnah says that before you give her anything, you have to take off ma'aseris, and then when you take it back, you have to take off ma'aseris again. Why is that? Because there's a possibility she may switch on you. So you gave her this grain. She may flip it into her own personal grain. So if you're giving her stuff that Mises wasn't separated from, she's not so firm. So she's not going to be careful. So you're going to end up causing her to eat something that's devil. So you have to take off Mises before. But then you have to take off Mises a second time again, because the stuff that you get back, you're not even sure it was the stuff that you actually gave her. So it's going to end up costing you to... Either it's going to cost you twice to get yourself, I'm not going to say get yourself a new mother-in-law, get yourself a new baker. So it comes, the Mishnah says, you have to be careful on both ends. So you see that people switch things. So the Gemara says, no, Hasam getting tali time, I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Road sahib et akaras bita boshe mechasana. No, because she's a mother-in-law, she's doing you a favor. She's not switching you, she's trying to cheat you. She's trying to give you the better grade. So she sees... sitting in Kailo because it's shvacha stuff, and she's Baksham doing better. So she doesn't want to tell you that she's giving you like one of those things. She sneaks a little gift for you. So she takes the cheaper grain and she gives you back the higher quality of grain, and she wants her daughter to have a better food. She wants to get the grandchildren a better tasting food. Baksham says she's embarrassed of her soul. She doesn't want to tell her soul. That's what she's doing. So she's not doing it to be mean. She's doing it out of the goodness of her heart. But the problem is that's beautiful, it's wonderful. So now she's going to end up giving you the tefillin and the shemitah back. So if you want to deal with her, yeah, it's true you're going to get back better grain. It's just going to be costing you twice the amount of maestros, because you can't give her stuff that she may end up using without maestros properly. And you can't take the stuff back without remaestros yourself. So the case of the mother-in-law is not a good example. Normally, we don't think people just arbitrarily switch things that are given to them to work on. But the case of the mother-in-law, so then only because she's looking out for the benefit of her son-in-law and her daughter, so she may end up doing something that is going to end up causing us some halakhic complications. Okay, we'll have to stop. We'll have to show next time. We'll finish a little bit. So tomorrow is 10 minutes ago. Let's extend tomorrow.
What time tomorrow?
Tomorrow is 6:10. Okay. But